So this is Guy Greenberg again, Joan Weitzner, and this is the third part of the recording. Okay, Joan.
Thank you. Abby's letter contained an apology for not having attended her sister's funeral and not having attended Bert's funeral. Frankly, I didn't know how she found out. But a second cousin of Bert's was in touch with her because he's the genealogist of the family. And he told her about it. But the return address on the envelope was with another person's name. And she was no longer living in Omaha, Nebraska. She was living in North Dakota with another man. So I really can't keep track of what she's been doing or about the children. And I wonder if she even cares or knows about them. But she said, "Dear Mom," in the letter. "Love, Abby," at the end of the letter. And when I read that letter to Michael and Peter, my sons, they got hysterical because it never dawned on them that she would use such loving words. And she left it up to me to be in touch with her. She gave me her phone number or write. And if I didn't want to, then that would be it. And I can't imagine her starting a new leaf at this time point in her life. I really think the only reason that she wanted to be in touch with me was to see if she could be in the will. She was disowned way, way back because there was no relationship. And as far as we were concerned, she was out of the picture. But needless to say, the boys remained Bert's children. We adopted each other's children so that Peter and Michael wouldn't have to go around with the name Bernstein while their sisters were Weitzners. It made it much easier and less to have to speak about and explain, because they all ended up in the same school. And at one point, Michael and Abby were put into the same class because they were going to put him in the class that she was in because they were brother and sister. But actually, we put a stop to it. We knew that they couldn't be in the same class. And things went along. Took the boys some time to acquiesce to the kind of relationship that was going on with the children and the difficulty that we had with them and their sicknesses. And finally, they ingratiated themselves to Bert, and he loved it. And he was able to embrace them and love them in return. And without the boys, I don't see how I could have gone through taking care of Bert for 3 years and finally to his death. And they were there to help, and they took over, which was amazing. So I'm grateful for that. But my life with Bert was interesting. We traveled a lot because of my work. I had learned how to be a picture framer, which is related to the arts, which is what I love so much. And I apprenticed with somebody I met in Israel. She was on tour as well. And when we got back to the States, she lived in New York City. And she said, "I need an assistant. Would you like to apprentice with me?" I said, "That'd be great." And we used to go, we were on tours. We were the only two that would go into a museum. Other people just sat there. They would sit and say, "We have to see Israel before we die." But they didn't go to really see it. They just did the physical aspect of it, but they didn't put their hearts into it. Anyway, I apprenticed and I opened my own business clandestinely in the basement of my house. Now, you're not allowed to do that because people do pay rent if they have a shop, and I did not have an official shop. So I had to get a lawyer. And they made me promise that I would not advertise, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But word of mouth paid off. And I did befriend many decorators. And I also not only did the framing for them, but I would hang the pictures for their clients and get paid for that. So as a result, we traveled a good deal. That was wonderful. And we paid off colleges. And Peter went to Juilliard and had to take a room. He went to Stony Brook first, then went to Juilliard. Michael went to Albany University and then went to NYU for tax law. And it's all paid up. Lisa went to Buffalo, so that was pretty good. And Abby went to Adelphi, which we had to pay up front. She was in a state school. And there were things that we had to do. When we moved, then Bert, when Lisa died, we realized that we couldn't stay in the house anymore. That it was not the same. We didn't need the space in the room. And Bert was really getting tired. He was 8 years older than I am. I was 62, and he was 70, right? even though he sat a lot, he also had a stand, and it was time for him to quit. So we tried to sell the house and the office, but we were on the brink of Hempstead. That's why Bert was able to build the house and the office in Garden City, because he was not in Garden City Center, which was a desirable thing. In fact, there were 7 different realtors in Garden City. It was such a popular place to live and to compete with. But they had maps of Garden City on the wall so that when people came in, they would say, I want to live in that section. I want to live in that section. What have you got to show me? Well, they never really wanted to look at our section because we were just a curb away from Hempstead. And Hempstead in those days had changed to an inner city. They had promised to build, it was a very, very old high school. It couldn't be repaired. It would cost more than to build a new one. Well, the people who lived in the town couldn't wait for it to be built. So they burned the old one. And it was really a territorial fight between blacks, Hispanics, Indians, Pakistanis, South Americans, and we were on the cusp of it. So that was really very difficult. It took 2.5 years to sell, and Bert had to close down the office. That was really hard for us. And we were digging into our savings because taxes in Garden City are killers. Anyway, somebody came along and an interracial family came, both physicians. They needed to get out quickly to go to the hospital, Mercy Hospital in Rockville Center. And they were both OBGYNs, I think I said that. And they would be called out at any time. They bought the house and they loved it. They even bought some of the furniture that I couldn't schlep with me here. And we moved to Austerlitz, a one-story acre of property, trees in the front but none in the back, so that Burke could have his garden. He He had a 40 by 80 victory garden. And I say victory because that's really what people did during the Second World War, or they wouldn't get the food that they wanted. And when Lisa died, we were up here in Austerlitz, and he became very depressed and very tired. And I said, Bert, you brought in the garlic, you brought in the onions, but you didn't bring in the potatoes. And we had a cold storage area that he made underneath the cellar doors that were outside. We had access to the basement from the house, but we had cellar doors as well. He said, I don't have the energy to dig them up. I can't do it. I said, well, I can't do what you can't do. And I'm doing enough as it is. I think we have to move. He said, you're right. We found I used to think that while this place, Camp Hill Ghent, was being built, that it was going to be the new Price Chopper. I saw all these trucks moving earth, building, taking down, doing all kinds of things, and I said, well, we'll be near Price Chopper if we stay in Chatham. I called up a friend and I told her that we were selling the house and that we were going to move. She said, where are you going to move? She said, we're going to sell our house and move to Boston. I said, nope, we're staying here. We love it here. We're here 20 years. I don't want to find new doctors, new friends, new temple, new shops, new this. It's great. It's got all the culture I want. And it's a gorgeous place to live. It's wonderful. So she said, well, better you than me. And she said, but if you want to live in Chatham, they're building in Chatham something called Camp Hill Ghent. I said, what is that? She said, a senior residence. In fact, she said, her house was a six-bedroom B&B. That's why she couldn't sell it. It was too big. And people didn't want that burden. But she finally sold her house. But anyway, she said, we don't run the B&B anymore. It's too much for me to do. And I wasn't going to start paying help. We can live on what we have. But the people that are renting my cottage on the property moved here from Connecticut so that they could watch and see what's going on and familiarize themselves with the community because they are going to live in Camp Hill Ghent. Why don't I give you the phone number? So I called them, and they said, well, this Friday we're having a get-together. We have a get-together of all the potential people, potential applicants, get-together every single month, and you can see the progress, write out an application, da-da-da-da-da-da. So we did it, and we did that, and we told the kids, Michael and Peter, what? You're going to stay up there when you have the chance to live near us? Peter said, it takes me 3.5 hours from Brooklyn to get to your house. Michael said, it takes me 1.5 hours, which is nothing, but I would like to be closer to you so that we could all be doing things together and be a family. So I looked at them and I said, but we love it up here. I don't blame you, Ma, but you really have to give us a chance. So Michael's wife had just retired from teaching, and she called up and she said, listen, you two, I'm taking you, you'll be stay with us for a week, and I'm going to take you to all these places that Michael and I found, and you can make up your mind where you want to go. And Bert said, I don't want to go. I said, we have to. It's not fair for them, for us to deny what they would like us to do, be grateful that they want us near them. Let's do the right thing. And we made play dates out of it. And this I have to tell you. She took us as far west as Newburgh. And she and Michael live in Putnam County. So we would be parallel to them, but be an hour away. And there were no, she took us in Putnam County to two senior centers. They were the most depressing, horrible things you ever saw in your life, with the old wallpaper peeling off the walls, with fake trees on every corner where you turn, or with dust piled up on the leaves. It was awful. They took us into an arts and crafts room, looked like something from kindergarten. So Glenna whispered to me, "You know what? That's very depressing." I said, "Yes, that's how I feel about it." And Michael knew that there was a place across the street from here where he worked in White Plains. It was a former hotel. So they just took the hotel and the restaurant downstairs that had an entrance from the hotel and from the street, created a dining area for the people who lived in the hotel to have their meals. And you had to have your meals there because you couldn't even have a hot plate. If there was a suite, Michael went across the street to see it. He said, "I wouldn't even let you walk in there." And you'd have to share the restaurant with people off the street as well. The only thing you would have would be buses and things like that convenient because it was right on the parkway. So we got to this place where we were with a realtor. They had arranged that also. Michael was at work, but Glenna went with us. And we had to wait until this couple that was observing the apartment, it was an apartment, it was not part of a senior residence. And from the distance, I thought, oh, there's one downstairs and one upstairs, so we could get the downstairs, because we can't walk upstairs. When we got to the place and finally got into with the realtor, there were two apartments on the first floor and two apartments on the second floor. When we finally got in there was still a couple coming through the hallway. We had to cling and attach ourselves to the wall and flatten our bodies out so that the people could go by. It was so narrow. I don't know how the furniture got in there. Maybe from IKEA, you piece it together. But it wasn't. It was modern stuff. And it was really tiny and it was awful. And the whole place was depressing. So we went with the realtor that was with us. She introduced us to the agent who was in charge of the development, and she took off. And we were with the agent. "Well," she said, "oh, let me tell you how this works. Do you have an animal, a pet?" I said, "Yes, we have a cat." "Well, cats are only $300 a year. A dog would be $500 a year, and I'll show you the picture of the breeds that you'd be allowed to bring in. But you have to pay $30 a month for the cat and $50 a month for the dog." I said, "What about garbage and electricity? You have to pay for garbage, you have to pay for electricity, telephone, TV hookup. I said, "What about a garage?" "There is none here." "Oh, we have garages, but they're further down. They can't be in this vicinity because we have families with children. And the people come in and out and think it's a freeway. And they back out and they don't see the children. They're not considerate enough. We have to put them further out." "Oh, how much is a garage?" "$100 a month. But we have car, what do you call it when it's just an carports. But of course you'd be responsible for shoveling the snow and taking care of your car there. And that's $50 a month." I said, "Oh, okay." And then she said to us, "And you're two people." I said, "We're a couple, not two people." She said, "Well, it's $300 for the one person. It's $200 for the second person." So Bert looked at me, and we were laughing to ourselves, and Glenna was here, Bert was on that side, and I was here, and we were giggling inside, and I said, "Bert, don't worry about it. I'm going to have a key made for you, and you can come and go as my lover." And with that, we got up, indignantly said thank you for nothing. I didn't say that. And the woman looked at us like we were crazy. She was shocked, and we were laughing. And it was already 3 o'clock, and we were starving. So we went across the road, and we went and had a great Italian meal. And that was the end of that. And we moved into Camp Hill Ghent. And we loved it here. Look at that view. There's a pond and 3 willow trees and gorgeous hills and wonderful people living here.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.